Welcome to the Title League Podcast. My name is Trish, and today we are going to be speaking with 10-year NBA guard and current player for the Killer Threes of the Big Three, CJ Watson. Welcome to the show, CJ.
Thank you. Appreciate you for having me.
Let's start by telling the viewers a little bit about yourself. How did you get into basketball?
It was just something that I played with my brother and my dad and my mom playing sports. They quickly always put a ball in our hands, and it was just something that we played just to be competitive and to have fun and stay out of trouble.
And how old would you say?
I was probably about five or six when I started playing, and then it continually gradually increased as I got older. I put more and more time into basketball.
And when did you think, or when did your parents know that you had some special talents? Was it right away, or was it something you had to work hard on?
Probably maybe in high school, maybe. But I'm sure I had to keep working hard and keep getting better and better each time. But I think they were just always just supportive of me just playing and going out there having fun and being on a team and really enjoying myself.
And after high school, which college did you attend?
I went to the University of Tennessee for all 4 years.
All 4 years, graduated from Tennessee, and you were quite a superstar there. Is that correct?
I don't know. You have to ask them.
Well, you earned SEC All-Freshman Team honors. You led the Volunteers to a 22-8 record and a 12-4 record in SEC play in your senior year, and you graduated as one of the school's all-time leaders in assist and steals. So I would say that was a pretty good record at the school.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So take us to draft night. What were your people telling you? What were your expectations of that night?
Well, my agent at that time told me just to hope for anything. We didn't have any promises or anything like that. But he did call me like as the second round was ending and said that I was going to get drafted with the last pick. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I was very disappointed, very angry, I guess. And I wanted to prove a lot of people wrong, and then just wanted to plan my next move, and that was overseas, planning.
So I can't imagine angry and disappointed. Yeah, that sounds like two emotions. But how did you pick yourself up from that? You made the decision to go over to Europe. Where did you play, and how did you stay determined to hone your craft and get better?
I played in Italy, a city called Reggio Emilia, a very small city, and I just really just put my hard head on. I went to a country that I never knew that I would probably be traveling to in my life, and just really stayed determined by wanting to prove everyone wrong, like I said, and also just wanting to challenge myself. I wanted to get better and see if I can really get better at the things that people thought I was lacking, and then also just improve and another thing, just see the world.
So, you know, you don't often see a 10-year veteran of the NBA going undrafted. So is there ever a point where you think back now on how much you've been able to accomplish and how well you were able to succeed?
Definitely, yeah. There's a lot of times I sit back and just think, how did I get to here and get to this point? But it definitely came from a lot of support from my parents and family, and just also belief in myself, belief in God, and just always wanting to get better, to challenge myself, to be the best that I can be, regardless if that's in the NBA or overseas or whatever it may be. But I always just wanted to be the best that I can be and not quit.
Yeah. What was your favorite part of playing in Europe? Which team has the biggest piece of your heart left behind?
Really none of them. I hate it. I'm not gonna lie. I hated being overseas. I didn't like it at all. Especially my first year, I was just so far away from my family, and that was the first time I've ever been so far from where I couldn't really physically like get on the plane and go see them or them come see me. So I didn't really enjoy my time overseas, but I'm definitely grateful and to be able to see the world and see different cultures and experience different cultures. But the basketball aspect, I didn't really like as much. So. Yeah. But I did grow from it, but it's definitely a stepping stone into my life. So
how did you jump from there to what was then called the D-League? How did you make that leap?
Yeah, my decision to go to the D-League was I didn't want to go back overseas. Like I said before, I didn't like being over there. So my choice was to stay in the D-League and give the NBA one more last shot and see if I can make it and get a call up. And eventually worked hard. Our team was doing pretty well and playing pretty well, and I was playing pretty well also, and I got a call up, and just never looked back after that.
Yeah. You know, a lot has changed, not just the name of the league itself, but most recently, there's a new opportunity for young players to bypass college and go directly to the G League. I'm curious what your thoughts on that are.
I think it's great. I think it's a chance for guys to stay in America and then also work on their game and learn the NBA game. I feel like the faster you learn the NBA game, the more productive you can be in the NBA, and the longer you can stay in the NBA. So I think it's a great thing. I'm not a big fan of college and how they use college athletes, so I think it's a great thing for them.
This is a change at the same time that the NCAA is trying to change as well and trying to make it more appealing for recruits to come and play university ball. Do you think that it's too little too late, or what do you think year one for all of these things is going to look like?
I don't think it's too little too late. I think they're doing just enough just to keep people to keep coming. I think they can still do more and still, I don't think college athletes should make $1 million or anything, but they should definitely get paid more than what they're getting paid. And then and even what the NCAA is even allowing them to get paid now off of like clothes and up in their brand and stuff like that. I feel like they still deserve more, but I think it's a great step in the right direction, and hopefully one day, eventually, they'll get exactly what they're worth.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that change is good. We see so many things around the league itself and around the game, the sport, that have changed, and hopefully as we move forward, it's going to be better for the players.
Right. Yeah, I think it will. I think it definitely continue to grow. More guys continue to go the G League route. I think it would definitely force the NCAA's hand to make a big decision.
Yeah. Well, some of the top recruits now are choosing to take that path. And there's part of me that thinks, you know, is it for the opportunity, or is it because it's new? Is it is it money? Is it, I'm curious as to what you think your thoughts are for why someone who would have such a clear college path would choose to go to the G League.
I think it could be a little bit of both. It could be depending on everyone's situation. For some people, it could be money. For some, it could be to further hone their NBA skills and get better at the NBA game and learn it faster. But like I said, this depends on each person. Like, I can't really say how it's going to work out for each person, but I'm sure it just depends on each person's opportunities and their lack of opportunities, I feel like.
So if you were graduating from high school this year, what path would you take?
Knowing what I knew when I was in high school, I would definitely go to the G League for the money. I was broke. I'm going where the money is.
Would you have, but now with all the hindsight, forget about what it was like now, knowing what you know and the experiences that you had, would that still be your same answer?
I think so, yeah, because I can still go to school while I'm in the G League. I can get my college degree online or whatever I want to do, or start a business, be an entrepreneur, whatever it is that I want to do. So, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for kids.
I like that. So let's get into your NBA career. So you started with Golden State. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so you were playing with Baron Davis and a young Steph Curry and playing for the NBA coach with the most wins of all time, Don Nelson. You came after the We Believe team and were there for like the big parts of the rebuild. What was that like?
It was fun. It was fun getting a chance to play with Baron, one of the guys I looked up to and played a lot on the video games and stuff like that. And then also having teammates like Monte Ellis and Allen Harrington, Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson, and like I said, the coach Don Nelson, who was a character in itself. So it was all a great learning curve for me. I learned a lot those 3 years being there, hone my NBA game, I feel like, to learn different things I need to learn at the point guard position.
How did it feel knowing that the best coach in the NBA handpicked you to be on his team?
It was great because at the time, there was two teams that I don't, a lot of people don't know this. It was two teams that could have called me up, the Charlotte Bobcats and the Golden State Warriors. And Golden State wanted me bad, so they just picked me first. So it was definitely a great choice. I don't know if my career would have been the same if I would have got called up by the Bobcats. I'm not sure, but definitely just grateful for Coach Nelson and that organization giving me a shot.
Yeah. What was the relationship that you had with Coach Nelson? What was it like between the two of you?
It was cool. It was like a player coach relationship. He tell you his honest his feelings. When I first got there, he told me he seen me play a lot. He likes my game, and he said he was just going to throw me into the fire and see what I had. And that was really all he said to me. So it was just he spoke when he needed to, and things of that nature. So it wasn't really like a huge relationship.
Let's talk about some of your more famous teammates that came out of that team. Let's go back to Baron Davis. Where do you think a player like him would stack up in today's NBA?
He'll definitely be an all-star just like he was then. He's at the point guard position. He's athletic. He can handle the ball. He can shoot it. He plays defense. He's a great leader, teammate. So he would definitely be an all-star. So, I mean, I don't think anything would change, really. Yeah.
What about Steph? When you were first playing together, what did you notice most about him?
His confidence. He came in with a lot of confidence. He came in already shooting the ball great, but then made it even better to where he's shooting the ball from 35 feet and changing the game of basketball and having little kids shooting threes and cheering, running down the court. So it was great to see that his trajectory in the league.
So, but sometimes, you know, players can have lots of confidence on the court and they can be pretty decent, but was it obvious that he was going to be impacting the game as much as he has, even from back then?
I think so. I think you saw flashes of it. I don't know if you could have been like, oh, he's going to be this great player, but you definitely saw flashes. And just the way that he plays the game and the way that our tempo was with the Warriors, it was up and down, and that fits right into his pace. So I think that's another reason why he succeeded, and he still is succeeding the way he is.
What would you say was the biggest takeaway from your time with Golden State?
Just the fans. The fans, they were great. Even though we weren't like a playoff team or a championship team like they are now, the fans were still there coming out, 18,000, 19,000, filling the stands and cheering. And anytime we went to the mall or went to the eat or anything like that, they were always there supporting you in good times and bad. So I would say the fans in the city of Oakland was great.
And then your next move was to Chicago. So you were playing for a franchise that is considered one of the most iconic in all of sports, thanks to MJ and the 90s era Bulls. So that's the team that I grew up watching. Those are the players that I idolized as a kid. So it was Jordan and Pippen and Rodman. That they were my family. Who were your basketball heroes when you were growing up?
Definitely Jordan. Those Bulls teams, I had like, always wanted the newest pair of Jordans that came out, or the Pippen, even the Robins. I like the Worms that came. But those are cool. And my biggest basketball idol is Kobe. So it was definitely fun to watch, be able to play against him. Wow.
So now you're a Bull. What did it feel like to step out in the United Center? What was that like?
It was cool because they played like the same like kind of intro that they did with the 90s Bulls. So it was definitely had chills going out. Just trying to live up to that, those championship teams was a lot. We didn't think we'd be as successful as we were the first year. So we didn't know what to expect. But as the season went along, we kept winning and winning and things kept rolling. Then everyone started to get behind us and kind of support us. So it was a great time in Chicago.
So it was you had a 60 win season, right? That year, that was 2010, 2011. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think we were with the best record for 2 years in a row.
Wow. And you were playing with the youngest MVP ever, Derrick Rose. What was that like?
It was crazy because I played against D Rose. I always knew he was good and he was great, but just watching him in person, playing against him in practice, then seeing how his confidence built from year to year. And then with that MVP season, it was just amazing to see how he was dunking on people, crossing people up, just getting to the basket with ease. And our whole team was just playing great. And it was great to be able to watch an MVP season like that.
Such an amazing player who then was plagued with a number of injuries, first the ACL tear. So what was your relationship like with Derek? Were you able to give him any advice? Were you able to be there to support him? I mean, you stepped up in his absence. So what was the dynamic between the two of you?
It was great. It was just a teammate. We're both kind of shy guys, so it was, and I feel like he's more shy than I am. So that means he really doesn't talk. So, but it was great. But even when he got hurt he just told me just to go out there and be myself and play hard and just try to lead the team to a victory in the playoffs, which we didn't do. But he was always very supportive, and we supported each other. So it's great to be his teammate.
That's amazing. You had the chance to play against Kobe, who was another one of your sports heroes. What was that experience like?
It was great. It was great to be able to play against him and just say I was on the same court as Kobe. Just how hard he worked, the way he demanded success and greatness out of not only himself but also his teammates was just something special to watch.
And you weren't nervous, or did you try and like what was the dynamic? I'm always curious. Like, I think if I was in front of a hero of mine, I'd probably suck. I wouldn't do well at all. I'd choke. But like, did he motivate you to play better when he was on the court with you, or were you a little bit intimidated?
The first few times that we played against him when I was on the Warriors, I was definitely intimidated and nervous. But I didn't really get in the game, so I don't think I really had much to do. I was just watching and just watching this greatness. And then when I started playing against him and got on the court, it was definitely something just to be like, oh, wow, I'm on the same court as Kobe. Definitely nervous. And I didn't want to foul him. I didn't want to hurt him. But as time goes along, you get that confidence and start earning it. And then just play hard against him and just leave it. Whatever happens, happens.
Well, what was like the first time that you guarded him?
It was, I think he scored on me. He didn't even dribble. He just popped the ball right open. Like, I wasn't even there. So it was kind of
That's okay. I feel like that's still a win. It's all right.
I mean, he does it to everybody, so it would be different.
That's right. Okay, I have to ask. I have to fangirl a little bit, but have you ever met Jordan?
I have met Jordan. I'm going to post a picture on Instagram tonight.
Okay. So... Are you watching The Last Dance?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah,
everybody's watching The Last Dance. Yeah. So what's he like?
I mean, he's great. He's a normal guy, like very intense. Like the show predicts, he's very competitive. He wants to win at everything. So, other than that, I think he's just a great person just to look after. To model yourself after and to portray yourself after, really.
Yeah. I love the documentary. I think it's like probably one of the best ones that I've ever watched. Apart from the awesome soundtrack and the overall greatness, it also shows how much the league has changed over the last 20 years. But actually, the league itself changed again from like in the 2000s. So what has it been like for you to play in that ever-changing landscape?
I think it was, I mean, that's the only league that I know, so it's hard to say how it's changed, but just from viewpoint, I think it's changed just from the physicality, just from the big man kind of being extinct, and then having four or five guards on the court and just playing really up and down basketball. I mean, that 90s era was really predicated on defense and physicality, not really a lot of offense, but now the league has changed to mostly offense and less defense.
Well, and it's hilarious because you're watching the documentary and they make such a big deal about 3 points, like taking right. threes, and it's like now everybody does it. It's the most common shot. Where when you're looking at even 97-98 season, it was still not common for players to be able to take those threes and hit them.
Right, yeah. Nowadays, people, instead of going up for a layup or a dunk or whatever, they'll shoot a three. So, I mean, it's just crazy to see how the league's changed. Even back then, Jordan wasn't really a three-point shooter. He was shooting threes maybe here and there. But now, like, it's really rare that your star player or whatever doesn't take at least 8 or 9 threes a game.
Right. Now I'm watching high school games, and they're all taking threes and on the B team.
Getting sickening.
So now you're actually a part of an exciting new league in the Big Three. So what can fans expect from this league?
You can expect a lot of fun, a lot of physicality. Like the 90s basketball era, it's bringing physicality back. There's really no fouls being called, really. it's excitement. They have a 4-point shot. And it's great to be out there and play against old teammates, old rivals. Then guys that I never played against. So it's just fun just to be out there.
And so this league was started by Ice Cube, right? What was the, what's the purpose of it? Why, what's the history?
This is my first year that I played last year, which is the third year, I think. So I think he wanted to start it because it was just to give fans something to watch and cheer for in the summertime, because there's no summer sports, I think. And I think that's really why he started.
Is it going to be in competition if the NBA changes their season?
That's a good question. I'm sure it probably will be. I mean, either 3-on-3 or NBA, I would have to choose the NBA.
And so your team is the Killer Threes, and Charles Oakley is your coach. So, God, what is that like?
It's really pretty calm, actually. He's not really too angry or getting mad at nobody, really, unless him and Steven Jackson are arguing. But he's pretty cool and calm. I thought he would be a lot more tougher as a coach, but he's pretty fun to play for. I definitely love playing for him.
No, that's awesome. Have you met Ice Cube?
Yeah, definitely. Met him a couple times. He's a great guy. Just high and by here and there, and then that's really about it.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward for all the sports to come back so that we can watch everything again.
Right.
Let's step away from basketball and let's talk about your foundation, the Quiet Storm Foundation. Who started it and what's your mandate?
It was a foundation that me and my parents started in 2009. I always said to myself, if I ever did make it to be successful, I always wanted to give back to my community. And that's what we're doing. We give back to the inner city, to kids in Las Vegas. We put on a free basketball camp every year, end of July. And then we also have a Black History Essay Month contest where kids write an essay about a topic that we choose. We pick six winners. And usually when I played in the NBA, we would fly them from Las Vegas to whatever city I was playing in, give them a free flight, limo ride, tickets to the game, and then have them come on the court at halftime to honor them. And just I thought that was a good thing just for kids to feel special and to feel acknowledged that what they're doing is great, and just to have them keep achieving and shooting for the stars. And then also we have a out-of-school program where we have kids come and do different exercises to work on their health and wellness. We also have a STEM unit part for them, and also have a chef that comes in and helps and cooks them meals every second and fourth Saturday. So we're just trying to keep kids active and keep them and really just give them hope. So.
That is so amazing. And that's focused in Las Vegas.
Yeah, in Las Vegas.
Wow, I think that's so wonderful. So how long has the foundation been running?
This will be the 11th year, so since 2009.
So have you had kids come back and tell you, you know, how much you've impacted their lives, like from year one, year two?
Yeah, I actually just seen a girl yesterday because we put on an event we gave out some free food to the community yesterday. And one of the girls was like, CJ, do you remember me? I was like, no, I don't remember your name, but I remember your face. And she said she was one of the first scholarship participants that we ever hosted. So it was definitely cool to see her out, you know, giving back and just being a great helping hand in the community.
I think that's so amazing. I always say that if you're given a platform or you've been blessed, then it's really your obligation to give back and to find to make more meaning out of what you have, what you've been given. So I think that your foundation is an excellent example of that.
Thank you.
Let's move on to your career as an author. So you have now written two books, CJ's Big Dream and CJ's Big Project. So can you tell us a little bit about both, or what inspired you to write? Have you always been creative, or how did CJ's Big Dream come about?
It came out just me sitting on the couch, honestly. I wanted to inspire kids still, even though I wasn't playing the NBA. I feel like playing the NBA is inspiration, but what can I do now that I'm not playing? And I thought, why not write a book, tell my story, and at the same time, kids need to read and they can still read my story and find some kind of inspiration or some kind of message in the story. And that's how the idea came about. And then it just went to work trying to put it together with a lady named Tamika Newhouse, and she helped me put the idea together and put it on paper into a book. And then the first book is called CJ's Big Dream, which is a story about CJ wanting to play in the wanting to play in the big game, which the big game is the NBA, and him winning the game and getting to his dream. And then the second book is about, it's called CJ's Big Project, and it's about CJ. He failed his first science project, but he got a chance to redo it over. And it's basically telling kids that you need to make sure your grades are straight before you can play any sports, because that was the message in my household. If you don't have your grades straight, you can't play. And then CJ eventually passes his project and gets to play in the next big game. So there's little messages in the book, which I think is good for kids.
Those are great messages for kids. That was definitely the rule in my house. Unless you got good grades, you weren't allowed to do anything. So completely relate to that. So now you are an author. You have the Quiet Storm Foundation. You have another venture that I was reading about, which is the Healthy Vending Machines. Which I absolutely love, because I think vending machines are the worst thing in the world. There's never an opportunity to eat anything healthy in them. And if you're on the go, if you're working, there's limited options. So why don't you tell us about that?
It was the idea that me and my wife came across, and we wanted to be entrepreneurs and just try something out and try something different. And me playing as an athlete, I've been eating healthy pretty much all my life. And we just wanted to try and help people who may not have the chance to eat healthy, to try and give them healthier options. And we came across this idea, and we just went for it and wanted to try it out. And it's been successful so far. Since this Corona stuff happened, we were doing pretty good. we just want to give people different options. And we have seaweed in our vending machines. We have different hot meals that you can warm up, pastas. We have tuna in there. We have chips, but they're gluten-free chips, things like of that nature. So I think it's a great thing for people to have healthier options.
Absolutely, especially for working people. How do we get them to Canada?
Canada, that's a good question. It's definitely possible.
CJ, you have all these different projects, and you're so successful at anything that you're putting your hat into. But what is life after basketball going to look like for you? Where is it going to be more writing? Is it going to be focused on the foundation? Is it going to be something brand new? What do you think when you think of the next 20 years?
I don't know. I just think whatever I do, it might be a little bit of all of them. I think the first thing is really just being a follower to my kids and making sure they're on the right path. They're doing everything that they need to be to be successful, and just really supporting them. But it could be a mixture of all those things: more books, more time in the foundation, more vending machines worldwide. I mean, who knows? I just take it one day at a time, and if I fail at something, then try to pick myself up and just try something else. So, I mean, I think that's the basis of it.
Well, I think that when you're successful at things, then really doesn't hurt to keep trying, whatever comes up next.
Yeah, that's the mindset.
And one last question. What would you want, looking back, what would you want your legacy of the game to be?
Just that I worked hard, put everything that I had into it, and that my 10 years in the NBA and 2 years overseas, that I played hard and left everything out on the court, and I was a great teammate, and I was very cordial and respectable to the fans and anyone else who came in my path, or I came in their path.
I think that is a great legacy to leave behind. CJ, thank you so much for joining us. Is there a way for the listeners to get involved with Quiet Storm? Is there a website? Is there something that we can add to promote, to help promote your foundation?
Yeah, the website is quietstormfoundation.org. And if you want to buy my books, you can go on Amazon under the title CJ's Big Dream or CJ's Big Project, or you can go to my personal website, cjpens.com, cjpens.com.
Perfect. CJ Watson, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.